Welcome back to the Firefighter Craftsmanship Podcast, where we guide you through the psychology of high performance, expand your mindset, and strengthen your resilience. And today's guest is going to probably hit all of those marks pretty well, and hopefully we'll tell a couple funny jokes along the way. So we're excited to welcome from Asheville, North Carolina, Jay Betancourt. How's it going, Jay?
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
I'm going well.
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm excited to talk to you again. It's been a while.
It has been a while. We met a long time ago, which you probably don't even remember, back at MAFC, the Metro Atlanta Firefighter Conference, way back.
I do remember that.
Yeah. We had a barley pop or two together at some point amongst the class times. So, yeah, you've been kind of in this human performance space for a long time, certainly before there was a lot of language around it in the fire service specifically, and certainly before it was kind of maybe the new, like, sexy beast to talk about. But you, you know, you've been an OG with, like, Rick George teaching there at MAFC, and
yeah.
A lot of that came from an unfortunate call, which we'll kind of talk a little bit about in your career. But give the people just a quick cursory overview of who you are and what you do.
Gosh, man. Okay. So yeah, my name's Jay. I'm from Asheville, North Carolina. That's where I live and work for the Asheville Fire Department. I'm the company officer on Rescue Company 3, where I've been assigned for my entire 15-year career here with Asheville. I'm fortunate to be involved with the North Carolina Breathing Equipment School, which is a pretty successful rapid intervention and survival school here in North Carolina. We've got a huge burn building and a great cadre of instructors. Like you were saying, I met you at MAFC, and then I think we ran into each other again at the Mile High Conference. I've gone around quite a bit instructing on survival and RIT. And the catalyst for that was on July 28, 2011, I went to a fire that ended up being a line of duty death fire, and I narrowly escaped alive as well. And so, I was only 2 years into my career with Asheville at the time. And so that fire kind of radically influenced the trajectory of my career. You know what I mean? When we all start in this gig, at least I did anyway, I wanted to do it all. You know what I mean? I wanted to ride the busiest truck company. I wanted to stretch hose. Being on the rescue truck was definitely my ultimate goal. But, the whole world was in front of me as far as the fire service is concerned on July 28, 2011. But that catastrophic loss really pushed me in this direction, the direction I've been on since then. And that's largely been survival and RIT, which is kind of my niche. And what I came to after a few years of really driving home that point is survival is not enough. It's not good enough for me or for the people I work with to survive this job, because if all we want to do is survive, just stay on the truck, stay in the station, get a different job, but I want to thrive. I want Asheville firefighters to thrive. And what that means is being effective and efficient firefighters and staying healthy, creating good relationships, becoming financially independent so we're not stressed about the other side of this job. And that's driven me into other avenues of fire service training. We created a program called the Resilient Mind Program in Asheville, where we teach firefighters, Asheville firefighters, to pay attention on purpose in the present moment. And the reason for that is because it's so far upstream of everything we do. But I think being able to pay attention in the present moment non-judgmentally has a strong positive influence on everything a firefighter does, from helping somebody up in the middle of the night to going to the big fire to surviving when things go bad. If we can access who we are and the training we've put together when the heat is on, when the chips are down, that's how we can be most effective and most resilient.
Indeed. Indeed. There's just so much meat in there in that answer. Where it's, you have a lot of energy around of RIT company operations and safety and survival, and firefighter safety. But then you've also have, a really good crossover to human performance. And then how do we get upstream of the kids in the river? How do we stop throwing the kids in the river versus just rescuing them when they're already in the river? I love that old fable of that. And so it's really, really cool to see somebody that was involved in an extremely traumatic event where, Captain Bowen ultimately lost his life. And like you said, you almost did too. And then to grow from that, but grow not just like, hey, how do we get better at RIT or RIC operations? But also like, how do we, we had Dina Ali on, who I know is a mutual friend of ours. And, how do we get ahead of like maybe just the occupational stress, and all of
Right.
those sorts of things? And I think that you bring this super, super unique ability to connect those divides, which is just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, thanks, man. I mean, I think the, I spent, like I was saying, after Captain Bowen died, I spent a lot of time focusing on firefighter survival, and we created the Captain Jeff Bowen drill, which really speaks to some of the key takeaways that I had and we had as the actual fire department after Captain Bowen passed. And what it came to me over a couple sessions, a couple offerings of the Captain Bowen drill here in Asheville and then down at the Breathing Equipment School, is that we're never going to be able to train for every single possible situation that a firefighter encounters. Our job is by very nature, ambiguous, volatile, dangerous, and ever-changing. So to think that it's going to be specific drills, not to take away from any of the specific drills we have in the fire service, like the NANCE drill is an amazing drill, like there's a lot of drills that were named and taught as preventing a certain loss or a certain incident from happening again, which I think is really valuable in the fire service. But upstream from that, we need to make good decisions in high stress situations based on our training and our experience. And when we're stressed out, when the stress is on, when the tunnel vision starts to come in, it's harder and harder for us to access the breadth of our experience and training. And that's what, the Resilient Mind Program seeks to address. I'll never be at 445 Biltmore again. Like I'm never going to go to that same fire, but I'll probably go to a shitty fire. In the future, something is going to go wrong at one of the fires that I go to between now and the time I retire. And I need to access all of my capabilities, all of my training, all of my experience. And the more stressed I am outside of the job, the more I'm going to bring that into the job. The more dehydrated I am, the less I'll be able to perform. The more hungover I might be when I get to shift, God forbid. All these things are going to affect my ability to be highly efficient and highly effective firefighter. And what I've come to believe and come to find is paying attention on purpose helps me identify those values and those goals and what's going to take me closer or further away from them. Once I've outlined the goal I have of being an effective firefighter that thrives in that job and in that occupation, then I can start to think about the decisions I make on day to day if I pay attention. It's easy. I think it's really easy to kind of go on autopilot, show up for your shifts, do the job that's put in front of you, eat the crap food because it's easy and convenient. Just kind of sport. Yes, I don't know if you guys have heard this term out in the West Coast, but sport bitching is something we try to avoid here in our firehouses, and I'm just as guilty as anyone else from time to time. But you get into the habit of saying, "This is gonna suck. This is gonna suck. This is gonna suck. Oh, the city's screwing us. The city's screwing us." And before you know it, we're gonna find failures because we've trained ourselves just to find a way to fail. And so if I can pay attention to that and catch myself doing that, I can more easily change that dialogue in my own head to being grateful for what I have, to being aware of how we can be successful and how I can be successful. I think I learned this from my partner in the Resilient Mind program, Scott McGregor. Thoughts become words, become actions, become traits. And by paying attention to what my values are, I can pay attention to which thoughts and actions and words and traits that I want to have to move me towards those actions. I think it's hard to argue with the idea that every action we take is a vote towards the person we want to be, and learning to pay attention to that helps me on the day to day and shift to shift move towards that person. It's not just about being a firefighter. I think a thriving individual in this community can be a good firefighter, and just because I'm a firefighter doesn't mean I'm thriving. It doesn't mean I'm good at it.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And just, I mean, all the meat and potatoes, right? In the first 10 minutes there, Jay. Way to go. Way to go. No,
Sorry. Hope I didn't ruin the whole hour.
that's fantastic. No, it's amazing stuff. And this is obviously what we're certainly into at Firefighter Craftsmanship. And And the things that reality, I think why I'm probably into these things is like I need these sorts of conversations. I need that conversation that you're talking about right there. And like if sport bitching was an Olympics sport, I would probably be a multi-time gold medalist, you know? And I think that what you focus on, you also do receive, you know? And so like if I focus really, really hard on having a negative attitude and being pissed about whatever the issue of the week or year or decade is, then I'm gonna also get that thing. But if I focus hard on, hey, let's do some hard basic skills training and be really, really good at basic skills job, well, I'm gonna get that too. But I might be a complete a-hole, you know? And so like, I can be really great at my job, but also have nobody that wants to work with me. And the community is just like, whoa, what was that guy's problem? You know? So, but I, and if I only focus all on relationships, well, then maybe the basic skill side suffers. And so like, it's this never ending ebb and flow. And I think like, for you with 16 years or so on the job there, in Asheville, like you've ebbed and flowed through different parts of those things, you know, and there's definitely a bell curve in the fire service for all of our careers where you're learning, you're having a great time. And then other times you're kind of in the trench and you're just like, man, I just got to get to the next phase. Or maybe it's time for me to do something else. Or how do I change my environment or whatever? And so it's cool to hear like that mentality. The way that you just worded it, you know, but I certainly love the whole like, hey, how do we build ourselves first to be thriving members of society, of our organizations, of our family units, to ourselves, like all of those sorts of things. It's really, really important that we have those conversations.
I totally agree. I totally agree. And I think it's worth having that as a melding those two aspects. You know, I'm not I there's not one person that lives here at home with my family and a different person that rides the truck. You know, I'm taking Jay, the husband and father and you know, just kind of guy in the world to the firehouse every, you know, 10 days a month. You know, and if that person's doing well, Jay the firefighter, Jay the fire officer is going to do well also. You know, one of the things that we try to share and practice with the recruits that have come through the Asheville Fire Department in the past 10 years is a home to work or work to home practice, where we encourage them to just, you know, get to the firehouse or get home from the firehouse is another big one. Take the keys out of the car, set them on the passenger seat, and just take a 3 to 5 minutes of just breath practice. You know, just watching your breath in and out, and then ending it with something to be grateful for. You know, and I just feel like that helps us not, you know, not drag stresses from one place to another and really be present for the next phase of what you're doing. You know, whether it be leaving a long shift that might have had its own frustrations so you can be fully present for your family, or going the other direction and leaving what's at home and being ready for the full shift. You know, and I think these transitions are really, they've been really helpful for me. You know,
I just had a great conversation with Matteo Pistono, who wrote Breathe How You Want to Feel, a fantastic
oh,
book, and we
nice.
talked about like transitions in there. So he's not a firefighter at all, right? He was trained as a Buddhist, and like he's kind of on that other, of course he's doing breath work side of the house, but he had some great stuff there that we talked about transitions. What does that look like? Because I, you know, that's something I've been trying really, really hard. The longer I'm on the job, like the harder it is for me to maybe transition or leave work at work or be super engaged with three little kids when I get home sometimes when you have no sleep for a couple days. So like what would that look like if you were going to train me as a new recruit? Like how do you teach people to do that?
Okay, I can give you the I can give you a quick run through. So the first part, and you probably went over this. What was it, the fellow's name again? You
Matteo
just mentioned
Pistono.
Matteo Pistono. You know, the first thing is kind of figuring out how to breathe. You know, you might notice like the more upset and the more riled up you get, the more you feel your chest rise when you breathe. You know, the more efficient breath is when you feel your stomach rise and the diaphragm opens and kind of use that diaphragm muscle to help the lungs expand and contract. You know, you get more breath down low where there's more alveoli in the lungs, you'll get more efficient breathing. And that'll tell the nervous system and the endocrine system that you're doing well. You're not stressed, you're kind of thriving. It's kind of like reverse engineering the systems. So for a work to home or a home to work practice, imagine you're pulling up to the firehouse after, you know, after some time off with the family, and there's just stuff going on at home, or, you know, or whatever it is, where you're still kind of dwelling on what was going on back there and not quite fully engaged in the moment or what's coming before you. So what I do oftentimes, pull into work, take the keys out of the ignition. That's important just to make sure that you've got the body language telling the mind, we're done driving now. You're in the car, but you're not focusing on moving the vehicle, you know? So taking the keys out and putting them down somewhere so that situation is over. Hands off the steering wheel. Sometimes I'll slide my seat back, but the biggest things is hands off the steering wheel, keys out of the ignition. I try to put my feet flat on the floorboard so I'm not engaged with the pedals anymore. You kind of see where I'm going here. So we're disengaging from the act of driving and just using this kind of comfortable and safe space of your vehicle to take a minute for yourself. So keys out, feet flat on the floorboard. And what you're doing with your feet flat is really trying to engage the feeling of stability. You know, with your foot totally engaged in there, you're the basis of your body, the bottom of your body is being supported, and that kind of runs through your entire body, you know. And then just settle in. I put my hands on my knees and try to sit up straight in the seat. It's not as easy in a car chair as it would be sitting somewhere else, but try to sit up straight, put my hands on my knees, and then just settle in as it is. You know, I try to practice four, I end up practicing about 4 times a week, about 10 to 12 minutes a day, you know, and because I do that, I have this really good muscle and neurological memory of what's happening. So when I do those things, my body and my nervous system and my mind kind of like, okay, we're doing it now. And I get kind of squared up, you know, hands on my knees, and I'll slide my hands back a little bit to help open my chest up. And what I'm doing is engaging the body. All these kind of preamble things are getting the body really engaged and kind of priming the pump. Just like, you know, ringing like Pavlov's dogs. You know, you're ringing the bell before you feed the dog here. So the mindfulness starts, the mindfulness dog starts salivating, if you will. I hate to mix the metaphors too much, but that's it. And then just come into your breath. You know what I mean? So I try to close my eyes, but you don't have to. I find that's less distracting with my eyes closed, but sometimes that can get people feeling a little exposed. You know, so if you're not going to close your eyes, just keep your eyes focused on one thing, that try not to look around. You know, in through the nose, feeling the diaphragm expand, softly blowing out through the lips. And what you're doing is just really kind of running the pump like that. The more efficiently you can run the breathing system, the more you're going to tell that nervous system, the endocrine system, that you are not under stress, you're not under threat, you're safe and you're stable. You know, the feeling of the body, the feet flat on the floor, sitting up straight, shoulders rolled back, that's also telling the body and the mind, I am stable and I'm ready. You know, so once our body is thinking it's stable and ready, our lungs, our breathing system, thinking I'm stable and ready, you just kind of run that over and over again, and it starts to refine those systems, you know? And so I'll do that literally for, you know, 3 to 5 minutes, which ends up being about 30 breaths, give or take. You know, I'm breathing about 4 to 6 times a minute, when breathing slow like that. So maybe six in, six out, five in, five out. And just rolling through that, and it kind of lets the nervous system, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system, they'll find more equilibrium. The body's just, I think, basically just biology wants to be stable. You know what I mean? The human body, the human experience is going to be at its best when it's in this kind of sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system equilibrium, and we are a stable being. That's when we're going to be the most effective. It's kind of like being in the athletic position. You're ready to jump, but you're not fully exposed and extended out, you know? And so breathing like that for 3 to 5 minutes, 30-ish breaths. And then at the very end, I have a lot of different things I say to myself. Sometimes it's really simple. I just say, I'm ready. You know, I'm ready. And I feel like I take that with me. You know, sometimes I have a saying. I got this from Thich Nhat Hanh. It's I'm solid as a mountain, I'm supple as a stream, and there's great space within me. And that's, I mean, when you think about that, it's a pretty deep metaphor, that this from Thich Nhat Hanh. You know, I'm solid as a mountain, which means I'm infinitely stable. You know, whatever comes my way, I'm grounded, I am rooted, and I'm okay with this. I'm supple as a stream, is I can absorb and change and be flexible around any situation. You know, water and gravity is the undefeated champion of the world. There's nothing that a stream can't get around. You know, so being both stable as a mountain and supple as a stream, I'm both like grounded in my values and supple and flexible on how I get there. And then the final one, I have great space within me. A definition of stress can be something that we perceive as taxing our resources to or our well-being, you know? And so when I have great space within me, when I remind myself of that, you know, I often when I say that in my mind, I often imagine like this cavernous warehouse of J with like one box in it. You know, you can imagine an Amazon warehouse that has like one box that's going to get delivered to your house. There's plenty of space in there. So when somebody shows up with a truckload of Amazon boxes, they're not going to be stressed out. When I walk into that firehouse and my rookie's like, "What the hell, Jay? They're flooding me out," or you know, it's not going to tax my sense of well-being because I've got a lot of capacity. You know, I can talk to this firefighter, understand you're going, bro, and this is how it works. You know, this is for the greater good. Versus be like, "Man, get off my back. Have a drink my coffee." Blah 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 blah. Because I'm trying to build, you know, an environment that's both effective and safe. You know, it's not, and I do that by making sure people's voices are heard. You know, that's kind of a tangent of a side point of the practice, but that's it. You know, that's kind of it. And I think it's pretty simple in to talk about it right here, and those directions are very simple, but the incrementalism and the consistency is what takes it from a simple idea to a very powerful practice. You know what I mean? Like if you were to do that one time, like if you go to on shift tomorrow and you do that, you'll probably feel nice. It'll probably help a little bit, but there's not going to be a very lasting positive change. Whereas if you do that every shift for the next 3 months, I would definitely bet my reputation you will experience some lasting, measurable, positive change, you know. And that and I'm I didn't I'm not making that up. You know, there's been a lot of studies. The reason I said I try to practice at least 10 minutes a day, 4 to 5 times a week, is because that's probably the most robust study I've found about how mindfulness can work, how there could be measurable effects on mindfulness. It's that prescription of, you know, 10 to 12 minutes, 4 or 5 times a week for 6 weeks. You know, that's when you start really getting the good stuff. You know, does that
Yeah.
make sense? Do you have any questions about the home to work or work to home practice?
Oh, I love it. It's amazing. And like every time I have these conversations with people like yourself, I just learn so much that builds on the things that I'm already into or I've researched or spent, a considerable amount of time and energy trying to figure out how it works for me personally, And so I think that there's just so much good stuff in there. And it's really, really important to point out that the breath is the pathway to your nervous system. And so, when Jay's talking parasympathetic and sympathetic, if you've listened to any of the Firefighter Craftsmanship podcasts, you've probably heard me use those terms. And those are just parts of your autonomic nervous system, but it's the fight or flight, rest and digest is basically what he's talking about if you don't really understand what he means. But by breathing, we're not talking about like meditation and all this stuff necessarily, but just simply using your breath for us in emergency response, we typically don't need to amp ourselves up. Like we're immersed in environments that are you're on edge. You don't know when the 911 call is coming. You don't know what it's going to be when it does come. You don't know what it's actually going to be until you're there and it's over. So we're always in this heightened alert state. And when you do that, so that would be acute stress. When you do that for long periods of time, if we don't deal with that acute stress, it turns into chronic stress, which then is directly tied to every disease in the book. And so by
Every disease in
just
the book.
absolutely. That in sleep, right? Like not dealing with acute stress and not sleeping appropriately. They both are tied to any disease that you want to insert here. And so that's where breath is so important. And like Jay just taught you a protocol there of like, just sit up straight in your car, or your truck. And before you go engage with life, whether that's at work or at home, take 3 minutes for yourself. And then he also used in some a mantra or positive affirmations or just self-talk that's guided, where he's saying, "Hey, I'm infinitely strong," and then I have this cavernous amount of resilience, with only one box in the warehouse. I love that analogy; it's absolutely amazing. But at the same time, it's not going to happen overnight, right? So you can't just go do it one time and then you go to work and you're like, "Well, that didn't work at all. Jay's full of crap." It's like, no, this is a consistent process.
Right. I guarantee breathing works every single breath. You know, you'll always get something out of taking a breath. If you don't believe me, hold your breath until you think I'm wrong. But yes, the way upstream effects of being able to not only be resilient in the face of stress, but come back to your feet. You know, we get knocked off our, you know, our horse in a variety of ways in this world, you know, but what I found is these practices help me get squared up more quickly and more completely. You know, I'm ready to go from call to call to call more so when I'm practicing. You know, and I'm not, I mean, I'm certainly probably like a lot of people in the world where I try to keep in good shape and I work out a lot, but sometimes I fall off the wagon for a week or two because of something. And the same thing's happening with my mindfulness practice. You know, I have a pretty regular practice than I have for over 20 years. But you know, there's been weeks and even months where I just kind of fall off the wagon and I see a difference. I totally do. I'm not just at home and at work. You
Yeah,
know.
absolutely. Yeah, and the goal is to be resilient in both places, right? We want to be resilient for the
Right.
calls. We want to be ready to provide customer service, and then we also want to be resilient when we're not at work, especially setting yourself up for when at some point you're going to retire or you're going to leave the occupation or they're going to kick you
Yes.
out. So like we want to retire
Yeah.
happy, you know, like it that is happening and your
Yes.
organization will continue without you. It's just the nature of the beast. So we want to retire
Right.
happy, healthy, and strong. And that's where like building the muscle memory, like Jay said, of the transitions. How do I breathe under stress? How do I ebb and flow with how much stress is going in my life? How do I use things like physical fitness, but also use things like breath work, mindfulness, nutrition, sleep, hydration, like all of those things. And a lot of what Jay just told you is all 100% free. None of that stuff costs you any money. You have the power to do all of that for no cost.
Right. That's exactly right. It's funny, like we've taught these resilient mind classes in Asheville for a long time. And I'll go, you know, it's a five class, 15-hour plus a lot of practices in the training ground. And we'll go through with all these recruits. There's been hundreds that have come through at this point. And every now and then some like a rookie will come through the academy and they'll kind of float out and ride my truck sometimes. And they'll be like, I remember those classes and I really liked them, but what do I do? And they ask these like kind of really short questions, like, but I don't get, how do I do it? And you're like, man, it doesn't get any simpler, bro. You know what I mean? There's a lot of talking in these classes. There's a lot of didactic knowledge and to help people understand why I think this stuff is so valuable. But when it comes down to it, if you sit still in a quiet place and focus on your breath, you're doing it, man. You know, the whole class could be taught in 5 seconds if you're willing to just take the steps and do it over and over again. You know, it's every breath you pay attention to is like doing a rep in the gym, you know, for your mind and for your endocrine system and for your nervous system.
Yeah, it's fun. That's kind of a funny point you make, like as an instructor of this stuff as well. I think we spend 99.9% of our classes like trying to sell the reality and the science and the
Yes.
physiology behind it. But yeah, the bottom line is the implementation of it is really hard, even though the practice is super simple.
Right. Yeah. And super free and super accessible for everyone who's willing to do it. I say
Absolutely.
that, let me put a caveat out there. I say it's super accessible for anyone who's willing to do it. On July 28th, 2011, I'd been meditating for about 10 years. You know, I'd had about a 10-year practice off and on. And I really feel like my practice, and this is what I said to the fire chief to let him teach the Resilient Mind program in Asheville. I really think my practice is one of the key things that kept me alive in that fire, right? And after that fire, I went back to the place where I've been meditating for years and practicing, and I sat down to be in my quiet place, you know, start my practice again. And as soon as I closed my eyes and focused on my breath, I was back in that fire. You know, and I immediately opened my eyes, stood up, and went and, you know, did something else because I didn't want to be back in that fire again, you know. And I did a lot of counseling work, and I did a lot of running. I was training for a marathon at the time, so I think doing all that running, you know, it really helped me kind of process through the fire. Just having all those, you know, all that time to do kind of repetitive motion, but you know, like bilateral repetitive motion while thinking about the trauma, you know. And slowly but surely, I was able to sit back on my cushion and get back to paying attention on purpose in the present moment. But that trauma was so great and so visceral at the time, it wasn't really available to me. And you can ask a couple different clinicians whether I should have kept going or not. And I know you'll get both answers. But I think in hindsight, I think it was wise to just kind of take that break and kind of purge in other ways. Now, I think if I had taken that break from mindfulness and just found the bottom of a bottle every night, I'd have never gotten home. You know what I mean? But by doing something else that helped burn off that cortisol and the adrenaline while really kind of working through the experience of being in that fire and losing Captain Bowen, it helped me come back to the point where I could sit in a quiet place and let all the distractions fall away. For those people that haven't done a lot of mindfulness practice, we spend almost our entire lives distracted by something. Especially nowadays with our phones in our pockets and podcasts in our ears, and that stuff's kind of often going. And if that's not going, we're having some sort of repetitive thought, basically about, half of it with men is how am I going to get laid, and the other half is, whatever it is you think about, like your hobbies, your dirt bike, your, like the guy that pissed you off at work, whatever it is. It's just we're on this repeat button after, So when we stop, when I stop. And I just try to pay attention on purpose to my breath or to my feet or to the feeling of the air on my skin. Those distractions fall away, and sometimes the devil comes out. You know what I mean? And it's not, I don't think that's a fault. That's not a fault of the human being, and it doesn't imply that the person who has that experience should stop meditating. I think there's just an awareness that there's something there that needs to be dealt with, And though mindfulness, I think, is the key to thriving in a lot of ways, it's not the only thing. We're not going to be able to bluff our way through great amounts of trauma just through paying attention to our breath, but I think you can easily figure out what the trigger points are. You know what I mean? Like, I often come out of my practices and one or two or three things will kind of bubble up to the surface over and over again as the other distractions go away. The thoughts of like, oh, I got to pick the kids up from school, or what's going to be for dinner. Over time, like something might come up like, oh, I really need to solve this one problem, or the grief that I'm having from a relationship or from a job or a certain call. That kind of seems to bubble its way up, and I know that's something I need to deal with outside of my meditation practice. Through whatever the ways are.
Yeah, wow,
And I
that's
think it's
really
funny,
good
man, and I
stuff.
credit that realization to like what I would consider post-traumatic growth after the loss of Captain Bowen versus just suffering from post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, indeed. And being proactive on figuring out ways to deal with those things, right? I mean, because you went through the heaviest experience that you could imagine. And so, and obviously that thing still impacts you. It's not just post-traumatic growth doesn't mean that you're never, ever going to think about that day ever again, right? I mean, you've referenced the date multiple times. You've said the address. We talk about Captain Bowen, right? And that's okay. Like that is a normal part of your human experience, but you've also said, hey, luckily for you, you had some of these practices beforehand, which you accredit to potentially your survival in that situation. But then you've also sought out other things like counseling and things like that, where it's great to hear, and we appreciate you being vulnerable here of saying, hey, you can operate at a really high level and also do these other things that maybe could be shunned upon, whether that's peer support or talk therapy or whatever, or breathing, right? But you've also correlated in there like, hey, physical fitness is really important, but it didn't necessarily solve all the things either, So it's not, you can't just put all of your chips in one basket and saying, well, thank God I found mindfulness because this is going to solve all of my issues. That's not how any of this stuff works. Just like
Not
if
even
I just do
close.
burpees, it's not going to solve all of my issues. I'm going to get fitter. But if I do too many, I'm probably also going to get hurt. Right. And so like, it's just like that with everything. So thank you for, sharing some of that, and I love the post-traumatic growth. Because if you're in this job more than 5 minutes, you're going to have some stuff that you got to unpack, you just are.
For
And
sure. For sure.
hopefully it's never to the level like what you've had to go through. But there's some bad days in the game. And so we have to have lots of different tools and resources and people that we can talk to and mentors and all of that sort of stuff that helps us deregulate, not just add more onto the pile of stuff.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I really don't think of mindfulness, like you're saying, as some sort of panacea or like a one size fits all solution for everything. But where I do find the value is when I'm paying attention on purpose in the present moment, I'm able to see, like, well, I haven't really been working out enough lately. That's probably why I feel kind of jacked up. I'm not burning off the cortisol and adrenaline that I produce through listening to the radio all day. Or, I'll go, well, I mean, sure, I've been working out, but I haven't really been sleeping that good, so I need to focus on that. Or you're like, I may have been working out and sleeping well, but I've been eating like crap. So, I know how bad in is going to be bad out. And it's not that sitting and listening to my or focusing on my breath for 10 minutes at a time is going to make me fitter or have better nutrition or better sleep, but I'm able to more wholly identify what's going on with me right now. You know what I mean? So I'll, I guess I feel like it's the upstream thing that helps me thrive in a lot of other ways. You know what I mean? I'll notice my loneliness if I'm paying attention more, if I'm lo so I'll seek out my friends and connections. I'll notice just things like, or I'll notice that those things are going well for me and I can just kind of savor that appreciation versus letting it go by. There's this guy, this really generous doctor, this guy named Brian Asbel, who is he's gonna work with us moving forward in the next iteration of Resilient Mind program, and he's a lifestyle medicine doctor. He started off as a cardiologist, and he realized that all the hard surgeries he's doing could easily be avoided if you like eat like food is medicine, move around like an animal, get good sleep, have purpose in your life, have meaningful relationships, to manage stress through some sort of way. To me, it's largely mindfulness, and so I'm really excited moving forward that Scott McGregor, my partner, Resilient Mind, we're going to correlate him in to create a program that's more focused on just how to be a thriving human and apply that into the fire service, which we have. We That's been a portion of the Resilient Mind program this whole time, but we're more fully incorporating him, which I think is pretty exciting.
Really exciting. Yeah, I'm ex very
Yeah,
excited to
for
learn more
sure.
about that indeed. So for people that don't know what mindfulness is, or like, what would a practice of mindfulness look like?
Oh man, it could look like a lot of things. I think the and I've said it a few times, like the and you mentioned him earlier. Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition is paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. So you can sit, you can lay on the floor or sit down somewhere, close your eyes, and imagine that you're on a beach, and that might be really relaxing. You're hearing the surf, and you're convincing yourself to kind of smell the sunscreen, and you're maybe even remembering the feeling of the sand on your legs. That's cool, and that's visualization, and it's relaxing, but that's not necessarily practicing mindfulness because you're not paying attention in the present moment where you are. The difference, or and you're not necessarily trying to even relax when practicing mindfulness, quote unquote. The idea is that you're finding something that you can pay attention to in the present moment. So oftentimes I encourage people to use something they can feel, like you can feel your breath, you can feel the pressure of your feet on the floor, or you can feel the you can like, if you think about it now, your hands have a lot of neuroreceptors. You have a lot of nerve endings in your hands, so you can pay attention to what your hands feel like, and because it's something that's physical in the physical world, it must be in the present moment. Like, you can remember what it was like to put on the first pair of new shoes you got as a kid, but that's not paying attention to the present moment. That's having a memory of a pleasant experience, and so the breath, like you were saying, the breath is the key to get into the nervous system. Like, so when you're paying attention to your breath in the present moment, it's kind of dual-fold. You're tuning and regulating your nervous system whilst also paying attention to the present moment. So it's a little, I feel like it's a little more bang for your buck, So paying attention in the present moment to something that you can only pay attention to the present moment is helpful. Non-judgmentally is the idea that, you're going to be sitting there thinking about your breath or paying attention to the warmth of your socks on your feet, and then you're going to remember that you got to go get groceries later, or that some guy really pissed you off on your last shift, or that, you got to make sure and get that your whatever committee you're on, you got to get your report in for that committee at a certain time. So that's you've now fallen off the wagon. You know what I mean? You're off the pay attention to the present moment train for a second. But the non-judgmental piece says, well, just come on right back. You're not beating yourself down for for not doing a perfect job, or for not meditating yesterday, or for whatever it is. You're in the moment right now. In this moment, I have agency to pay attention to my, you name your anchor point, your breath, your hands, your feet. One moment at a time. Well, that moment's over. You know, the distance between the future and the past is this super small sliver that we all live in from second to second, moment to moment. And by being, that's where we have all of our power and our agency, you know? So if I'm just down on myself over screwing up the last five breaths, or kind of anxious that I'm not getting done fast enough because I got to do something else when I'm done with this, I'm kind of missing the mark. You know, it's so if I have if you have time for one breath, you have one breath. But that's kind of it. I know that was kind of meandering, but you know, paying attention to something in the present moment, so something that you can pay attention to now versus a memory or a plan, non-judgmentally. So however good you're doing at it right now, you're doing it, and that's the point. You know, we're not trying to win an Olympic medal. You know, it's one breath at a time. And I try to remind myself, and certainly remind the students when we're doing these classes, you know, you've got nowhere else to be. There's nothing else to do, especially in the academy. You know, you're always our rookies run everywhere they go. You know, that's just part of the it's just part of the academy culture, is moving with a sense of purpose at all times. So that can be, as you might imagine, pretty taxing on the nervous system and on the brain. You know, so when we're with the students, you know, it's a reminder, like, you're not running right now. What you're doing to become an effective Asheville firefighter is being right here, right now, paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. You know, and it can, especially as the type A go, go, go personality, it can be pretty hard just to stop for a minute, you know, but it also helps us gain the ability to take action in the present moment versus being distracted by the past or the future. You know, dwelling too much in the past often leads to, especially in the maladaptive side, to depression. Dwelling too much in the future often leads to anxiety. What if, what if, what if? You know, being in the present moment can be somewhat of an antidote for both of those maladies, or both of those issues that people have. Does that answer your
Fantastic.
question?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely
Yes.
fantastic. And, you know, in any setting, whether you're sitting here listening to this podcast, your brain is spinning off and you're thinking, or Jay says
Right.
something and you're like, oh, I remember when. And then 10 minutes maybe goes by and then you're back. So just by practicing mindfulness, and there's so much human performance psychology research around this now. We'll link some studies in the show notes for sure around mindfulness. But it is, if we can be present in the in the moment and process the information in the moment, like think about that in relation to an emergency scene, if we want to make this all super sexy,
Right.
right? Like if you show up on scene and you have fire blowing out of one window, but not another window, and you're tasked with doing vent enter search or ladder rescues or stretching the first line, it's pretty important that you read the conditions on those buildings. And those are the things that all of our organizations expect us to do, but very few of our organizations actually train us how to do that from a human standpoint. They train us how to stretch
Right.
lines and do primary search and throw ladders, but they're not training us on how to process this. And so that is something that you can take full control over by practicing mindfulness. And you can do it. Let's say you're in a class, you're on your online training platform. I won't use the trade name that most of our departments use. And you're like, oh my gosh. Then let that thing play in the background. You're probably not paying attention to it anyways. Let's call it like it is, and practice some mindfulness with your breath right there, right? Now you're killing two birds with one stone. But then next time, like, hey, maybe that training that you're getting, now you're actually able to pay attention to that for more than 0 seconds. And you're actually processing the information that's being put out there that you should learn, you know? And so those are the correlations, I think, with mindfulness. And I know for sure, like when I'm really intentional about some sort of mindfulness practice, and I just use a very simple breath, just like you do. Sometimes I'll use an app, sometimes I won't. That helps bring me back when I forget. Man, oh man, the
Right.
quality of my overall life is so much better, and I'm so much more resilient to stress.
Right. Yeah, I have to tell folks, like, if you know, we got a 6% pay raise last year in Asheville, and that was a good raise for us. You know, 6%, we'll take it. Sometimes we get 4, some years you haven't gotten anything, but 6%, not bad. If mindfulness may not be a panacea, but it might make you 6% more effective on the fire ground. You know, we'll take that all day. You know, a 6% improvement, especially if you can compound those 6% every year, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I mean, it's not a showstopper. It's not going to stretch the line for you. It's not going to search the building instead of you, but you might be more effective. You might enjoy the time a little more too. And when it
Indeed,
doesn't go well,
yeah.
you might recover a little better from that.
Yeah, great point there for sure. So how do we cross the divide of like how do we build relevant training that incorporates the human psychology and human physiology side of this thing, but is also training that people are stoked to go to, and they get something from it? Like, how are you guys crossing the divide, whether it's through the Resilient Mind program, or I know that you come back and you teach multiple times, or you check back in during fire academies, during different modules, things like that. Like, explain how we can do a little bit better job.
The things that have been, we have, Scott and I, we spent about 10 years building and kind of creating this program and figuring out what works and what didn't work. And we've had a lot of successes and we've had a lot of setbacks. I think the most effective way that we found is to make our program is 5 weeks. So doing it every other week, which makes it a 10-week process. It takes about 6 to 8 weeks to create a habit, So by doing the program every other week for 10 weeks, we have a chance to create a habit with our students. We're rolling into the academy. We've got a lot of didactic knowledge, a lot of slides, a lot of talking, but typically we're going to have them doing practices, about 30 to 40 minutes out of those 3 hours, so about three plus practices every class. Then we go out to the academy maybe once a week during that time, and we do what we call a post-PT practice. So right after they work out, we have them do a practice while they're still sweaty right on the PT ground. And that helps, it helps build towards that 4 to 5 times a week, 12 minutes a day. We encourage them to do some of the practices on their own. Whether they do them or not is definitely it's their decision. And a lot of them say they do it. Some of them may or may not do it, but I believe most of the students, they say they're doing it to some extent. And you can kind of tell the ones that are practicing, they seem to be doing a little better in the academy as it wears on. And then the final piece that really sets the hook is we'll try to go out at least during every block. We do PPE, then engine block, then ladder block, then RIT. That's how, and we break it up into those large modules, and we cover, hose streams and appliances, and we cover ladders, we cover all the ifs to stuff within those blocks. But we try to get out there for every block, and we do some sort of practice with them on the fire ground. So they'll come out of a drill, and Scott and I'll get between that drill and the next drill, and we'll have them for 5 minutes. We don't want to bring them all the way down to full resting because we want to keep them up. But we'll stop them, we'll have them face the building, and we'll take them through a few different practices. There'll be like one practice, but a few different times of just kind of resetting, So they're watching their breath. They're being a, we'll do some stuff where they're kind of aware of sounds on the fire ground, paying attention to the left side, the right side, working towards situational awareness. And I think that, like, doing those practices in their boots, hopefully they're smelling smoke. We really try to get out there when there's a fire going, in all these modules. I think it helps kind of set the hook and put it deep in that memory system. I'm gonna mess up the name, but the smelling sense helps us go deepest into the body and deepest into the psyche. So when they're smelling fire and they're kind of jacked up and they're doing the practices, we try to return them back so they're still kind of amped but reset. And we'll talk to them about it later. Like, do you feel like you're too low right now? Do you feel like you're back on your butt and you're having to kind of get yourself amped up to go again? Do you feel like you're still charged up? How do you feel now versus how you felt when you jogged over here right out of that drill? And we get a lot of positive feedback from the students. Our fire academies are often kind of in your face. We run a really good fire academy in Asheville. But as the Resilient Mind guy, I really try to imply that you're safe with me. You know what I mean? So these guys have a place where they can be honest with me. And I tell them, I'm not going to burn you. If somebody comes and mess with you while you're with me, I'm going to stick it up for you. And I think that hopefully, and I think it does helps us have a real honest give and take of opinion and experience, but that is what I think that's worked the best so far,
Yeah, it's great
and
stuff.
it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work and a lot of time dedication. If you're going to go teach ladders, or you're going to go teach VES, or whatever your special thing is at the academy, oftentimes That's going to be for 3 or 4 days, 1 week, and that's your chunk of the academy, right? Doing resilient mind stuff, you're kind of out there all the time, not all the time, but really often for a little bit of time. So it becomes a little more cumbersome in your lifestyle. You know, take that out there 2 or 3 times a week for an hour at a time. But it seems to work.
Are you doing
You
a
know,
lot of
we've
that
got a
stuff
lot
like
of,
one-on-one? Are you doing a lot of the stuff one-on-one with the recruits or like as a group after they have the basic foundational class?
as a with the training ground practices, often it's in groups of seven, maybe, you know, because they'll be broken into little squads to go around and do their drills. You know, so if we have a recruit class of 18 people or something, you know, 20 people, it might be a 7, 7, and 6. You know, so that's what we'll do in those small groups. But with a post PT practice, we'll do it with the whole group. And then with the classroom sessions, the whole group as well. And then also we've had success doing practicing the home to work and work to home practice, where Scott and I would go to the academy at quitting time and just go through that practice with them, then release them, you know, and that's with the whole group as well.
Very cool. Are you focused mainly
But yeah,
on
I
like,
mean, I think that
down regulation in those, or are you just trying to meet them where they are and then have them kind of process the reality of their current situation?
We focused on down reg oftentimes down regulation, yes. Oftentimes finding, but not to the point of relaxation. So the post PT practice is very much meant for deregulate for down regulation. You know, when you're working out, obviously your sympathetic and your parasympathetic nervous systems are no longer in balance. You're all jacked up, you've got a lot of adrenaline, a lot of cortisol. And so what we'll have them do while they're still in that kind of elevated state is lay flat on their backs, focus on their breath, and then do kind of a body scan. And again, you're not trying to tell a story, just like move through the body from toes to head, being aware of every portion of your body as you go from, you know, how do my ankles feel, my shins, my knees, all the way up to the head, and then having some big picture situational awareness of like, how does my body feel as a whole? And then being aware of your greater surroundings, like on the training ground itself. And what that is specifically designed to do is come back to re-regulation, you know, and like you said, you alluded to it earlier, you know, you get a call, even if it's not that big of a call at the firehouse, just the act of getting on the truck and listening to the radio and hearing the tones drop, you're gonna pump some cortisol and adrenaline, your system's gonna be a little out of regulation. You know, by practicing, you know, the human body is a creature of habit. By practicing re-regulating in that way, you're more quickly and more wholly going to come back to homeostasis than otherwise. You know, and some people do that really well naturally, some people don't, but these practices are, I'm pretty convinced that they move you in that direction. You know, it's just we're voting with our attention and with our experience and our action to be a more regulated person by doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, that's great stuff. And the reason I ask kind of that line of questioning is we've had quite a few people say, man, I love this stuff. Like, how do I take it and start to teach it? And so it's
Right.
kind of like any other skill, right? Like you got taught forcible entry and then now it's your turn to teach, or, you know, even at the company level, well, you're probably using a lot of those methodologies and training implementation that you were shown or taught or provided.
Right.
So same thing here, you
Right.
know, it's when we talk about, you know, trying to create more resilient firefighters or emergency responders, whatever occupation you're in, it's not always just do more, 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 more. You know, this is a, hey, we're actually teaching you how to recover, but still be in the pocket of success and be high performance, but you're able to
Right.
process information again, which is super relevant, like on a fire. Okay. So we'd get ventilation, boom, we go up and we cut the roof and we come down. Well, we don't have a billion people unseen, so now we have to go do something else. So I need to be able to recover, refocus, bam, onto
Right.
the next task, whether maybe that's secondary search, you know, or whatever.
Right.
And so that's where the relevance of where Jay's talking about, okay, well, how do we downregulate to now get ready to learn a bunch of stuff after PT in an academy or in life? But then, okay, evolution on search week. I go and I do my thing, and maybe it was good, maybe it wasn't so good, but I come and I talk to Jay or Scott really quick. Boom, I downregulate, I process a little bit of that information. Okay, now bam, onto the next evolution where I can implement some of those concepts. And that's where the meat of human performance really is, in my opinion,
Right.
is how do we react,
Yeah.
respond, front load and then be successful. But and then ultimately, when it's all over at the end of day of academy, how do we get rid of a lot of that stuff, the gamesmanship and all of that, before I go home and I talk to, my family or have to study or whatever?
Right. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's like, right. That's what we're going for. We do a lot of on deck here in Asheville. You might be on deck waiting to go into a fire. You might go do your job and come back and be on deck. And that's where a lot of those training ground practices are really directed towards. It's like, what are you doing with that moment on deck? Are you just kind of looking around? Are you paying attention? Are you getting yourself back in that athletic position, ready to respond to whatever you're called to do? I do think it's like, training firefighters to be resilient is an incremental process, but you got to start. You can't just hand someone a handout and be like, these things work. It's really integrating it into the practice of creating firefighters.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. So talk about, are you guys doing mostly success-based training? Like, let's talk about the RIT training stuff that you do, like with North Carolina Breathing School. Like, what does that look like? Is that success-based, failure-based? How are you navigating all this sort of stuff?
It's definitely success based. We use the crawl, walk, run model of training, where you won't be asked to do anything that you haven't been shown how to do. With North Carolina Breathing Equipment School, it's relatively fast paced because it's not meant to be for rookie firefighters. There's the expectation that you'll have a couple years under your belt before you come out, so you have an understanding of how to search a building, what a RIT bag is, that sort of things. And what we're offering there is very large, realistic scenarios with lots of overwatch. So you'll get, we'll go through all the basic skills of being an RIT or how to survive on days one and two. And then you're kind of thrown into it as a group. We break into different. It's so funny. Like we break we're because it's such a large school. We're running 60 people through at a time. We break into different crews, different cadres to teach different areas. And I'm in the basement crew. It's typically more survival stuff down there. So I can't really, though I know the guys and know their philosophies of teaching, I can't really speak to exactly what happens in the other stations as much as my own. But we're definitely teaching people towards success. And if but it's there's no gimmies, and there's also there's no tricks. Like if you get yourself in trouble in an RIT scenario, it's not because we snuck in and changed the layout behind you, or we didn't, you know what I mean? It's because you that's what would have happened in a real fire. I look at the job of being a firefighter trainer almost as like creating a theatrical performance. I want to put these firefighters in as real of a situation as they can be in with the tools they need to be successful. And if they're not successful, that can be reversed back to like, well, what did I not show them ahead of time? And it's definitely not the case where someone's just going to get beat down or made fun of, like, oh, you suck, your guy died next. Like we're going to make sure everyone walks out of there with an understanding of how to be successful and a chance to do that. In breathing equipment school in particular, everyone successfully completes every drill before they move on. We don't have a large attrition rate there, but typically, two or three people don't finish the school. And that's just because they like for whatever reason they weren't able or chose not to complete the drill. But there's definitely a chance given, a lot of instruction and a lot of encouragement all along the way. And sometimes it's a fitness issue, sometimes it's just a not people just don't necessarily have the will to push themselves to be that uncomfortable. Sometimes people get injured. It's not that common, but if you roll an ankle, you may or may not be able to continue, and that's fine either way. We definitely want to focus, make sure people are safe first and foremost. But that happens, and people come back the next offering and finish up when things like that happen. Sometimes there's equipment failures. We normally get people like we can replace the air pack if need be. It's just like that in the fire academy. Well, we the a lot of breathing equipment school instructors, a lot of us from Asheville teach the RIT and survival portion as well as other portions of the academy. So we bring that same idea of crawl, walk, run. But when we're running, it's pretty intense. So like I want, especially in survival and RIT, I want people to find a place that they hadn't been to before, when it comes to their own resilience, their own ability to work within fatigue, within heat, within confusion. I often refer to the OODA loop a lot. When it comes to survival, observe, orient, decide, act, you know, just so you don't necessarily have all the answers in any of these skills or drills, but if you're willing to make decisions and be aware of what the outcome of your decision is, if it's moving you towards your goal, keep on. If it's moving you away from your goal, well, you've got to just observe, orient, decide, and act again, because eventually you're going to find the way out. You know, if you're in a 1600 square foot house and you go the wrong way, you can probably recover from that if you're willing to observe what's going on and change your course. You know, I think oftentimes people get in trouble when we don't know what to do, or and so therefore we do nothing. You know, if you're lost in the smoke, like, oh my God, I don't know which way to go. So you just sit. Well, that's a recipe for disaster with a ticking time bomb on your back, you know, which is the air pack. Or you go the wrong way, get so flustered, you're like, well, that's it, man. It's over. We're dead. You know, like there is a series of actions that'll get most people out of the situation they're in and burning buildings if we're willing to kind of thoughtfully and systematically keep trying. You know, and that's what I'm going for in basically all firefighter training, but certainly in RIT and survival. Does that answer your question?
It does, yeah. Yeah, and there's just so much energy and stress created around some of these modules in RIT, and firefighter safety and
Yes.
survival is certainly one of them. There's a shitload of bravado around it too.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's the balance of like, how do we provide high quality training, whether it's in recruit school or it's in online firefighters or a regional conference or whatever, that actually gives them skills and abilities that hopefully can help them if they get jammed up in a situation. But also
Right.
balancing, you know, where these people have to go back to work or, you know, they're
Yeah.
choosing to
Yeah,
come to
yeah,
this
yeah.
class
Just
at a
beat the hell
conference.
out of them and put them back in a truck.
Right, yeah, and it might be, you know, on a 48, and we might be doing this nonsense on day two, which I don't agree with that at all. Like with a style of RIT where you're going to put the screws to some people, and at some point the training needs to do that. But let's also be smart about it organizationally based on our shift schedule. And oh, that company was up all night, right? Or let's not intentionally put that hardest training day on those companies on day two at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, because they're
So are
not
you on
learning
a
much, you know.
4896?
We are. Yeah.
I'm
Yeah.
sorry to interrupt you. Are you on a 4896 there?
Indeed. Yeah. It's pretty
Okay.
common here
And
in our area. Yeah.
you're finding that day one is the time to train on that just because you're fresh off your 48 or your 96.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And yes, it depends, but you know, like some of our companies are really, really, really busy. And so we know on day two
Yeah.
that they are going to be, they've probably gotten up at least three or four times the night before. Let's probably not choose those companies to go.
Sure.
Plus then that night they're going to be up three or four times again. Like, let's set people up for success. But at the same time, the training should stair step, and at some point we have to do hard training, even if it's online. We have to do that
Yeah.
because we have to make sure that people have the reality and the ability to overcome those situations and problem solve and that sort of stuff. We can't lie to ourselves and be like, oh, we're going to be fine. You know, and
No, you're
so
not.
yeah, no, you don't just figure it out when you get there, right? And so like
No,
there's a
yeah.
huge balance, but I like that of like, hey, we're going to give you the tools and the systems and the processes. We're going to be there to help you. At some point, you also have to prove it. But we're not just having you
Right.
prove it because, like, oh, that seems like it's relevant. It's like, no, these are very, very well thought out drills,
Right.
and metrics that we think that you should hit as a baseline standard.
For sure. Yeah, I often tell, like when I ran the 94th Academy here in Asheville, and what I told my guys when we were heading into RIT and Survival Week, and it's true with every discipline of fire service. You're proving it to you. You know, you need to know when you get to that fire, when you get to that call, like you're ready. You know, and if you just read the book, you might want to be ready, or you might know how one might become ready, but you haven't proven it to yourself or the guy standing next to you that you are ready. You know, and it's not a matter of like being hazed or like we're going to be a jerk to you if you screw it up. I think it's really important to support that member and that recruit to the point where they have all the skills they need and they have all the knowledge and all the tools that are necessary to be successful. And then they find out and they prove it to themselves that they can do it when it's hot. They can do it when it's dark. They can do it when they're tired. You know, and with that, I think purpose and meaning are really powerful portions of life. And I think that that you can gain a lot of purpose and meaning from knowing that you're effective, especially in emergency services. You know, it's a great gift we have that we have the opportunity to do stuff like this. You know, and I think training is a huge portion of it. You know, it's probably the most fun slash safest version of the fire service versus going to the real fire where you might, you know, I love going to a big fire, but it's not somebody's best day. You know, there's a lot of there, the other side of that emergency is somebody's really having a bad time. Whereas you go to the training center, get a big rock and fire going, we all have to work together towards success. There's really not a lot of downside, you know, if done right.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And we could do another full hour just on how to design some of those trainings, right? And it's a mountain that's kind of like climbing a sand dune, you know, like you have it's hard to change some cultures that have been around in some of our organizations for a long time in relation to training. But if you have an organization where you have a blue flu epidemic every time there's a major training, then you probably have a cultural issue as far as what do our learning environments look like. And you need to start there and change the bravado that's associated around that before you're going to have any quality learning.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. Yeah, I tell the guys, you know, it's not, you're not gonna like rise to the occasion of the big fire. You're gonna settle to your level of training. You know, you're not gonna get better just because it gets harder. You're probably gonna get a little worse. So that's where we need to make the bottom really robust, not reaching for the top when the call comes in.
Yeah, I would
And that comes
agree.
from the basics. It comes from being good at the basics and being tested and tried at them in conditions, you know.
Yeah, and it comes from developing quality and healthy humans, which you've given us some fantastic stuff about, right? And it's really cool to
That's
hear like
absolutely
a
right.
pretty big organization like Asheville putting their money where their mouth is on some of this stuff and saying, "Hey, we're going to bring this weirdo Jay in and he's going to teach you guys, right?" You know, he's going to teach you some breath work and mindfulness and all this sort of fringe stuff. But then also we're going to bring him back every other week. We're going to bring him back during the major modules and we're going to support that financially, or one of Jay's cadre members, right? And so that's really, really, really cool to hear of organizations that are doing that across the country. And it should be the norm. Unfortunately, it's not. So it's up to us to change that and to make it the norm.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. One step at a time, one success at a time. It's funny, man. I really credit Captain Bowen with that success, you know, and the reason behind it is I got a lot of I mean, kind of a lot of notoriety after that fire and after the loss of Captain Bowen and what happened. And I took all of my like organizational cred and pushed it all in on that program. You know, I went to Chief Burnett at the time and I was like, look, boss, this might seem kind of weird, but I really think this is the future and this is how we're going to make better firefighters. And if you can trust me when I tell you this is the reason I survived that fire, let me run a little bit. And he did, to his credit. And also my buddy Scott, like, you know, I'm a blue collar guy. I'm a firefighter. I'm a really hands-on person. I'm not highly educated, but my buddy Scott McGregor, he's wicked smart and highly educated. He's a clinical therapist. He has a lot of doctor friends. And so having the bona fides and having the research to back up my feelings really made it go a long way, you know, because it's not a matter of me, Jay, asking someone to trust him. You know, I'm not just asking you to trust me. You know, I can through research and through like partners in academics, I can tell you why this is scientifically accurate. And I think that really helps the buy-in, you know.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. Huge fan of yours, man. And thank you for spending some time with
Thanks.
us here at the Firefighter Craftsmanship Podcast. We will bring you back if you are willing, because I have a lot of notes here that I want to chase these rabbits, and we've been going for over an hour already. So, how can people reach out to you and find you? And I guess the biggest question that I certainly have is with the Resilient Mind program, is that something that we can bring you guys in or access, or how does that work?
Well, gosh, that is a nut I've been trying to crack this entire time, and I haven't really figured it out. I would love if you want me to come to your fire department, I'll come for sure. It's very hard to transport a 10-week long program that is, you know, the touch-ins are sometimes only 35 minutes per week, you know, across the country. I've done me and my partner Scott have done a lot of kind of what we call like an info session, like 3-hour lectures at different conferences, and I'd be happy to do that again. We're working on, like I said, with my buddy Brian, with our friend Brian, we're working on now creating a video-based system You know, where we have modules that people can kind of watch through the a different set of software that Brian's familiar with, and then we'll do online Zooms once a week. That's in construction right now, but once that is complete, I can the thing I'm really excited about that program with is I can hand it off, and it can touch as many firefighters as are willing to put the time into it. You know, and it's not bottlenecked by my personal schedule. You know, I really don't want mindfulness to be a cult of personality where it's just like the Jay and Scott show, because we're only so scalable. You know, I like when we met at MAFSE, I was going to a lot of conferences, and I noticed my kids were, you know, I kind of figured out my kids were growing up and they weren't going to be around forever. So I really backed that off because my number one priority in life is being a good dad. But there, you know, the kids are growing up. Elijah's in college. He's in college out in Crested Butte, and my daughter, she'll go to college next year. So I'm becoming more open to traveling around again and going to different conferences and whatnot. But I think the video-based class module is going to be where we're going to get the most bang for our buck. And when I say buck, it's totally free. Like, we're not, this is not a money venture. It's just because I want to do my part for the fire service, you know? And the video part is because I'm kind of lazy and don't want to have to travel over the place. But yeah, that's basically it. If you or anybody else wants to get in touch with me, Jay Betancourt is my handle on Instagram and Facebook. My email address is jbetancourt408, which is my seniority number at work. So if you know my name, you know how to get in touch with me. And I'd be happy to do as much as I can for any firefighter. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean I'm going to travel to every fire department in the nation, spend 8 weeks there at your training center, but I'd be very happy to share anything I know or have. And I'd love to come out and hang out with you guys sometime.
I love
And
it.
get with, you know, I'd love to, I was thinking about, I'd love to get with the firefighter craftsmanship crew and go to some of the trainings that you guys are putting on. Are you still working with Rick and some of those other guys?
Yep, every once in a while. Yep, and old Canada Dave himself. We just had Canada Dave
Oh
on the
yeah, I met him at
podcast.
on the Mile High Conference.
Yep. So yeah, we're lucky we get to teach with those guys, or we're teaching our own classes as well. So yes, we need to join forces at some point and teach something really, really fun. That would be a
I would love
blast. I
that.
would love it. I would love it. I would
Yeah, I'd
just
love to.
basically be a
I've
student.
all the cadres I've been in, you know, I'm in my Resilient Mind stuff with me and Scott and Brian now. And then I have my firefighter stuff, and that's all just, you know, firefighters that are teaching in more of the traditional sense. But it'd be really cool to cadre up with a crew that's all focused on, you know, making high functioning, high reliability firefighters, also using the slant of mindfulness and performance psychology.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's great stuff. Well, thanks again,
Yeah,
Jay. What
man.
a fun convo. It's good to see you again. And thank you all out there for listening to the Firefighter Craftsmanship Podcast. Don't forget to rate, review, and share this show, because it actually does help us grow this thing from the grassroots level. And stay smart.